ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له، ومن يضلل فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، فإن أصدق الحديث كلام الله، وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وشر الأمور محدثاتها، وكل محدثة بدعة، وكل بدعة ضلالة، وكل ضلالة في النار. أما بعد، فعنوان لقائنا في هذا اليوم هو عقيدة الإمام أحمد ومنهجه. والإمام أحمد غني عن التعريف والبيان، فهو الصابر في المحنة، الثابت في الفتنة، وإمام أهل السنة. ويكفيه أنه أخذ عن كبار أئمة الإسلام، وأخذ عنه كبار أئمة الإسلام، ومن هؤلاء وأولئك الذين أخذ عنهم وأخذوا عن الإمام الشافعي رحمه الله. فقد كان الإمام الشافعي تلميذا عند الإمام أحمد، وشيخا له، ورفيقا له أيضا، وزميلا. فمن كان على مثل هذا المقدار من العلم والدين والتقوى فإنه لا شك ولا ريب لن يكون أقل من هذا المقدار في الصواب والسداد. ويكفي الإمام أحمد فضلا ونبلا تصنيفه لكتابه الكبير الذي حوى نحو من 30,000 من أحاديث الرسول صلى الله عليه وسلم، وهو مسند المسند الذي عرف باسم مسند الإمام أحمد. وعندما صنف الإمام أحمد هذا المسند خاطب ابنه عبد الله قائلا: يا بني احتفظ بهذا المسند، فإنه سيصير للناس إماما. وحقا صار مسند هذا الإمام إماما للناس، يرجعون إليه وينهلون منه ويأخذون عنه، وما ذلك إلا لعظيم منزلة الإمام أحمد في النفوس علما وعقيدة ومنهجا.
السلام عليكم. The Sheikh, he began his discourse regarding the book which you all know to be, or regarding the topic which is the belief of Imam Ahmad and his methodology. And he began by saying, all praise belongs to Allah. We praise Him. We seek aid in Him, and we seek forgiveness in Him. We seek forgiveness in Allah from the evils of ourselves and from the evils of our own actions. Whoever He guides, there's none who can misguide Him. And whoever He leads astray, then there's none who can guide that person. I bear witness that none has the right to be worshipped except Allah. And I bear witness that Muhammad is His messenger. And to proceed, and then he went on to quote several verses which are connected to the Khutbah al-Hajjah. And then he said, to proceed, this meeting of ours is regarding the belief and the methodology of, or the manhaj, to use the word, so that we can become familiar with the word, the manhaj of Imam Ahmad. And he doesn't need to be described to us. We all know who he is, and he is in no need of having us to tell us where he came from and what he was from. But it is sufficient that we know that he took from the great scholars of Al-Islam in his time, and the great scholars of Islam took from him. And from their likes was Imam Ash-Shafi'i, rahimahullah. And we know the status of Imam Ash-Shafi'i. And Ash-Shafi'i was a student of Imam Ahmad, as well as being a teacher of Imam Ahmad, as well as being a Rafiq, a close companion, and a comrade of Imam Ahmad. So when we see that this is the relation that they both had with each other, a teacher, a student, a companion, and a comrade, a fellow colleague. If this was the case, then it is sufficient to know the level. These things allow us sufficiently to know the level of Imam Ahmad, of his deen, of his piety. And if that is the case, if he has such a high status of deen and piety and taqwa, then his attitudes and his correctness and his ilm will be of an equally high level. And likewise, it is sufficient for us to know of a book that he wrote, and he's called Musnad of Imam Ahmad. This book contains at least 30,000 ahadith, 30,000 hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam,
30,000 hadith of our Prophet.
And about this book, he told his son Abdullah, he says, "Oh my son, preserve this book and safeguard it.
Preserve this Musnad
and safeguard it, for indeed it will become an imam, a leader for the people." And that has been the case, that as time went on by, it did become in reality an imam and a leader for the people. And that was only the case because of the great status and manzila, level that they put to this imam, Imam of Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah, Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal. And it was because of his firmness and being firmly established during the times of the fitna that he faced.
وعندما أخبرني الإخوة القائمون على هذه اللقاءات جزاهم الله خيرا بأن لهم رغبة في أن يكون موضوع بعض من هذه اللقاءات حول عقيدة الإمام أحمد ومنهجه، فكرت كثيرا، لأن حياة الإمام أحمد كلها في تأصيل العقيدة والمنهج، فرسائله كلها ومواقفه كلها ولقاءاته كلها، بل إن كثيرا من فتاويه وأجوبته كل ذلك يصب في باب العقيدة والمنهج. فلو أننا أردنا تتبع ما نقل عنه فضلا عن أن نشرحه لما استغرق ذلك منا الساعة ولا الساعتين، بل لا اليوم ولا اليومين، ولقضينا في ذلك أسابيع إن لم يكن أكثر ونحن نشرح. وهناك رسالة علمية هي رسالة دكتوراه قدمت في الرسائل والمسائل التي نقلت عن الإمام أحمد في العقيدة، وبلغت هذه الرسائل والمسائل مجلدين. وهذا فقط بالنسبة لكتاب واحد، وهو كتاب طبقات الحنابلة. فكيف إذا عرفنا أن هناك كتبا كثيرة أخرى هي عن الإمام أحمد كتبت أو لبعض أقواله نقلت؟ فالأمر يطول أكثر وأكثر. لكني رأيت من بين هذه الرسائل كلها رسالة كتبها لبعض تلاميذه واسمه مسدد أبو الحسن الأسدي البصري، فرأيت مناسبة شرحها والتعليق عليها بما يسعه الوقت ويتسع له المقام.
So the Sheikh then went on to say that once the brothers who were responsible for this gathering and this weekend, once they informed him that they wanted several meetings or one gathering concerning, and they had great desire for this, concerning the method, the manhaj, the methodology and the aqeedah of Imam Ahmad, he thought and he contemplated a lot, as well as being happy at this fact, because he says that the life of Imam Ahmad, the life of this great scholar, all of it, all of this person's life was in the matter of establishing and laying down the manhaj and the aqeedah of Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah, in ta'seel, in laying down the guidelines of this manhaj, his stances, his fatawa, his advices. They all, if you look at them all, they all make this a laying down, a bearing down and an implanting of this one thing, the manhaj of Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah and their belief. So therefore he thought, because to explain this person, this great scholar's belief, it's something that will not be able to be done in 1 day or 2 days, rather not even in weeks. It may take us more than that. And just to explain his belief, and also he inferred to a PhD thesis which has been forwarded to some university, and in this thesis it compiled some of the treatises and some of the smaller treatises of Imam Ahmad on this matter, and that has reached 2 volumes in Arabic, and that is on one matter. And that was just with regard to the book called Tabaqatu Hanabila, and the levels of the Hanabila. So, and that's just for one particular matter. It says, how about all the other treaties that have been taken or do exist from this great scholar, and all the athar that had been given by him? So when this was the case, he thought it that the best, looking at what was around, to explain this person's belief from a book called, or from a treatise which has been compiled, but from him, it's called Musaddad to Imam, to one of his students, who is called Abu al-Hasan al-Basri, yeah?
Abu al-Hasan al-Asadi
al-Basri. Right, Abu al-Hasan al-Asadi al-Basri. And inshallah he helps that to explain this. And the book or the treatise is called Al-Musaddad to Abu al-Hasan al-Asadi al-Basri. And he will inshallah try to, within the time limitations, to explain as much as possible, so that we can benefit as much as possible.
ومسدد هذا أيها الإخوة ليس مجرد طالب علم أو إنسان من عامة الناس، وإنما هو إمام من أئمة القرن الثالث، وهو من شيوخ الإمام البخاري ومن شيوخ الإمام أبي داود السجستاني صاحب السنن ومن شيوخ الإمام أبي حاتم الرازي، فهو ليس إماما فقط ولكنه من شيوخ الأئمة. وقد توفي هذا الإمام 27 و200، فهو من أئمة المتقدمين ومن العلماء السابقين ومن الحفاظ الثقات الأثبات المعروفين. لما أشكلت عليه بعض الأمور في الفتنة واضطربت في ذهنه بعض مسائل العقيدة، لم يجد مفزعا بعد الدعاء والتضرع والخشية والإنابة إلى الله إلا بأن يراسل أئمة العلم وأن يكتب إليهم لينصحوه ويبينوا له منهج السنة ومنهج أهل السنة. فأرسل هذا الإمام مسدد إلى الإمام أحمد أن اكتب لي
بسنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. فلما ورد كتابه إلى الإمام أحمد بكى الإمام أحمد لما ورده كتاب مسدد، وقال: إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون. كأنما يقول: هذا إمام وعالم، بل شيخ للأئمة والعلماء، تشكل عليه السنة ويضطرب فيها، فكيف بمن سواه من أهل العلم أو طلاب العلم فضلا عن عامة الناس؟ ولكن لئن وقع هذا الشيء في صدر الإمام أحمد وذهنه وقلبه، فإن ذلك لا يغض من قدر مسدد، بل إنه يرفعه ويعلي مكانته، لأن الفتنة إذا جاءت عمت وصمت فلا تبقي ولا تذر. لذلك كان من دعاء الصالحين في كل قرن وفي كل حال: اللهم إنا نعوذ بك من الفتن ما ظهر منها وما بطن. ثم قال الإمام أحمد: يزعم هذا البصري عن مسدد أنه قد أنفق على العلم مالا عظيما، لأنه كان مشهورا بالرحلة، يرحل في طلب العلم وينفق المال في تحصيل كتبه والقراءة على أئمته. قال: يزعم هذا البصري أنه قد أنفق على العلم مالا عظيما وهو لا يهتدي إلى سنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. ثم كتب إليه ناصحا ومبينا وموضحا كتابا لو عدت سطوره لأحصيت، ولو أحصيت كلماته لعدت، لكنه مع هذا وذاك صار هذا الكتاب من أحمد إلى مسدد منهجا علميا عقائديا يذكر في الكتب وينقل في التاريخ ويلقن تعليما للدارسين والطالبين.
The Sheikh then went on to say that this Musaddad, this book, although it came from a person, it's incumbent that we know this person. This person was not just any old person, rather he was an imam of the third generation. He was a great scholar, one of the teachers of Al-Bukhari, one of the teachers of Abu Dawood, and their like. Sheikh Masa Bukhari wa Dawood, Zakar? Said, one of the teachers of Abu Hatim al-Razi. All of these three people were great scholars in their own right, and this person was their teacher. And this person was sending this Musaddad to Imam Ahmad. This person, Abu Hassan Aswad al-Basri, he died in the year 227. And he was from the great scholars, from the reliable people of the early generations. So the Sheikh then went on to say that if the matter of the Sunnah, because what he did, and we'll show that he wrote to Imam Ahmad, telling him, explain to me the Sunnah of our Messenger. He said, if the matter of the Sunnah and other matters in the time of the Fitna became confused and clouded for this person of this great level, and he had no choice but to return back and write to the scholars, asking for nasiha and asking for clarification for what was for, asking for clarification for the manhaj of the Sunnah, and thus what would be the level of, what would be the situation of other than him. And therefore he wrote to Imam Ahmad saying, I write this to you, explain to me the Sunnah of our Messenger for these times.
or words to those effects. So once this letter and the treatise came to Imam Ahmad, he cried. He cried and he said, indeed, from Allah we came and to him we return. And the Shaykh is saying, it is as if Imam Ahmad is saying that this person, this Imam, this great scholar, and he's the person, Abul Hasan, that when he wrote this to him, you know, if he's, it is as if Imam Ahmad is saying that this person, this great scholar, if the matter of the Sunnah has become cloudy for him, then what about the other people, the layman, ones who are the students? Well, what would their condition be? And even though these words are not from Imam Ahmad, but this is what the Shaykh said he could have meant, this does not in any way little or reduce the status of this book, Al-Musaddad. Rather, it raises it up much higher. It raises it up to a level of a great level, showing its significance, because it clarifies for the scholars the stance of the Sunnah in that time and in that place. So thus, and from the du'as of the righteous people, and from the du'as of the righteous people, is that they say, O Allah, we seek refuge in you from the fitna, that which is open and that which is hidden. And also, this Basri, I refer to the person who sent him and asked for this clarification, and from whom the letter was then answer was sent. This person, the Imam Ahmad said that about him, he thinks he has spent a great wealth in Islam. And what does Imam Ahmad mean? A great wealth, because this person, this scholar, Abul Hasan, was known for spending money, known for traveling, known for looking and searching for ahadith. If this was the case, and the Shaykh would say, this person claims and he thinks he has spent so much wealth and his time and effort in clarifying hadith. لكن the word Al-Musaddad is also is the name of the person as well as the book is known by the name. So both phrases are, you know, Alhamdulillah. Because it is name, but sometimes the book is known by the name of the person. Anyway, this Imam Ahmad said that it is as if this person, he claims to have traveled, sought for knowledge, and therefore spent money. And this claim, and even then he is in need of clarification, in need of nasiha, of the right stance in the fitna. So therefore, after this, Imam Ahmad wrote to him, giving sincere advice, clarifying the matter. And this clarification and this exposition of Imam Ahmad, it has now become a manhaj, a methodology, and a book which clarifies these things throughout the times. And in fact, even in the books of history, it is known for the exposition of this methodology and this manhaj.
قال الإمام أحمد في رسالته إلى الإمام مسدد: بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله الذي جعل في كل زمان بقايا من أهل العلم يدعون من ضل إلى الهدى وينهونه عن الردى. هذا صدر كلام الإمام أحمد ومفتتح قوله، وهو إشارة إلى تعظيم أهل العلم وأن وجودهم مستمر في كل زمان وفي كل مكان، وإن كانوا قلة وندرة، وأن وجودهم أشبه ما يكون بصمام الأمان الذي ينجي الله به المتمسك فيه. وكأن هذا المعنى أخذه الإمام أحمد رحمه الله من قول النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم: لا تزال طائفة من أمتي ظاهرين على الحق.
لا يضرهم من خالفهم ولا من خذلهم حتى يأتي أمر الله وهم على ذلك. إذن هذه الطائفة مستمر وجودها، دائم بقاؤها ولو كانت قلة، وهي على الحق منصورة وبالصواب مشهورة، يهتدي بها المهتدون ويسير بضيائها السالكون.
And then Imam Ahmad said, beginning his book, he said, all praise be to Allah who has put in every period of time a people of knowledge who invite the people who have misguided to the guidance and who prevent them from lying and from deviating. And thus the Shaykh went on to explain this sentence. He says, it is as if this beginning from Imam Ahmad has an indication to the great respect, the ta'zim, that is given to the people of knowledge, and that they are mustamir, that they continue, and they are always there from all periods and from all times, even though they may be few. And it is as if by their being there, they save and bring away from deviancy those who have deviated. And it is as if Imam Ahmad has taken this beginning from the hadith, which is, and the English is, that there will not cease to be a group of my ummah manifest of victory upon the haq. Those who oppose them will not harm them, and the matter will stay as such until the hour comes or the order of Allah comes. And it is as if, and this group is always there, continuous. This group is the aided group. This group is known by its correctness, and they're well known for this, and by this the people are saved and guided.
ثم قال رحمه الله واصفا أهل العلم هؤلاء ومبينا شيئا من فضلهم، قال: يحيون بكتاب الله الموتى وبسنة رسوله صلى الله عليه وسلم أهل الجهالة والردى. أقول: وكأن هذا الكلام قد أخذه الإمام أحمد من قوله تبارك اسمه وجلت قدرته: يا أيها الذين آمنوا استجيبوا لله وللرسول إذا دعاكم لما يحييكم. فكأن أولئك البعيدين عن كتاب الله موتى، وكأن أولئك المخالفين لسنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم ليسوا أحياء. فمن كان غارقا في الجهالة ومتلبسا بألوان الضلالة فإنه لا شك من الأموات معدود، ولو تنفس وراح وجاء وتكلم وصاح وملأ الدنيا صياحا، فإن الحياة الحقيقية إنما تقاس بمقدار استجابة الناس إلى ربهم تبارك وتعالى. فهؤلاء أهل العلم يحيي الله بهم بما منحهم من كتاب الله ومن سنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم موت القلوب الذين غرقوا في الجهالة وغرقوا في الردى والضلالة.
Then the Shaykh went on to quote the next passage from the treatise, and he says, these people, i.e. these scholars, they give life by the book of Allah to the dead, and by the sunnah of our messenger also they give life to the dead. And by the sunnah of our messenger,
Okay, and also give by the Book of Allah and the Sunnah of the Messenger, you know, they stop the lies and the foolishness of the people of Jahal, of ignorance. This statement of Imam Ahmad, or this part of the treatise, it indicates, or it is as if he has taken it from the saying of Allah, the Mighty and Sublime. O you who believe, answer Allah and His Messenger when they call you and they give life to you. I think that's the verse. Maybe if I've missed something out, maybe someone can correct me. And this verse shows that the real life is by adherence to the book and to the sunnah. Because anyone, the life of the heart, although they may be living, people may be walking and talking, but if they are deep-rooted and drowned in ignorance and confused with misguidance, then despite the fact that they breathe, that they talk, they may scream, and they may walk, and they may travel the whole world, they have no real life. Because the real life is only attained by adherence to the book and to the sunnah. And this life that one has is judged or is seen in context with the measures of the sunnah and with adherence to the book.
ثم قال رحمه الله مبينا ايضا فضل اهل العلم وعظيم اثرهم قال فكم من قتيل لابليس قد احيوه وكم من ضال تائه قد هدوه فما احسن اثارهم على الناس. في هذه الجمل الثلاث بيان لثلاث قواعد. اما القاعدة الاولى فهي ان اهل العلم يرجعون بصافي علمهم وصحيح منهجهم من كاده ابليس وصرفه عن النهج الصحيح المبني على كتاب الله وسنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. فمن انصرف عن الكتاب والسنة فكأنما هو مقتول بسهام ابليس والعياذ بالله. واما القاعدة الثانية فهي هداية التائهين الذين لم تتبين لهم الطريق ولم يتضح لهم السبيل، فليسوا هم قتلى من قتلى ابليس، وليسوا هم سائرين على النهج الصحيح، فهم لا الى هؤلاء ولا الى هؤلاء. فبأثر العلماء وبهديهم وتوجيههم يهتدي هؤلاء التائهون الضالون. واما القاعدة الثالثة فهي الشهادة ان هذا الاثر من الهداية للتائهين والاحياء للمقتولين انما هو اثر من احسن الاثر، فقال فما احسن اثارهم على الناس. اذا هداية الناس الى السنة وارشادهم الى كتاب الله وهدي سلف الامة هو اثر عظيم يعد من احسن الاثار. فليست الاثار اذا التي يقاس بها صواب المنهج وسداد السبيل هي تلك الاثار السياسية فقط، او الحركية او الحزبية او الحماسية او العاطفية، بل ان هداية مبتدع الى طريق السنة او هداية تائه عن سبيل الحق اليه لتعد من احسن الاثار ومن اجل الثمار.
And then the text goes on to say that, and how many of those killed by Iblis have they given life to? And how many of those misguided or lost misguided people have they guided? And how great is the effect of these and the scholars upon the people? That was the text. And then the Shaykh went on to say, it is as if these sentences explain three great fundamentals, three great principles, and the first of them is, and in this sentence again, the Shaykh is explaining the excellence of the scholars and of the ulama. And therefore the first principle is that the scholars are those who are referred back to, and their knowledge and their purity is referred back to. And it is as if these people, these scholars, they... And it is as if these people with the pure, clean knowledge and manhaj, they take those who have been misguided or falling into the plot of Iblis. And those who Iblis, then the devil, has diverted from the right belief and the right manhaj. Because the right belief and right manhaj is based upon the book and the sunnah and the faham of the salaf of the ummah. And it is as if when Iblis diverts them from these things, that he has killed them with his sword, because there is no life after going away from the book and from the sunnah. That was the first principle, that these scholars, these ulama, they give life to those who have been killed by Iblis, i.e. by preventing them from falling into the diversions and traps of Iblis. The second one, guidance to the misguided and those who lose their path, the wanderers who don't know where to go, those who don't know what the way is. And these people are not from those who have been stricken, or not those who have been hit by the sword of Iblis, but neither are they from those who know the manhaj or know the methodology and know the way, but rather they are misguided, they don't know where to go and from what to take from. So again, it is also these people that these scholars, they guide. And then the third principle, and this is because they have a great, and this principle shows that the scholars have a great, and it is a testification that the scholars have a great athar, a great effect, a great impact upon these people, because these people were misguided, but then they give them life. Once they give them life from death, from the heart, the effect is been shown. And this is taken from the last part of the text. And how great is the effect upon the people. So it is a testification by Imam Ahmad upon the greatness of the impact of scholars upon the misguided and those who have no life. Because it is by them coming back to the sunnah and the book that, and the way of the Salaf al-Salih, that their life is changed. And this is the way of the impact. And this is the great impact. And it is by these things that we judge and we measure. We make thing called al-qiyas, we measure the rightness and the guidance and the manhaj. And it is not by other things. We do not measure the correctness of the manhaj by politics or by hezbiyah or by emotions, but rather by conforming to the book, the sunnah, and the faham of the salaf of the ummah. And then it is by these things that they give guidance, al-hidayah, to the people.
ثم قال رحمه الله أيضا في بيان فضل علماء السنة وهداة الأمة ينفون عن كتاب الله عز وجل
تحريف الغالين وانتحال المبطلين وتأويل الجاهلين. ينفون أن يدافعون ويذبون. وهذا المعنى الثلاثي مأخوذ من حديث رواه عدد من أهل العلم عن عدد من الصحابة والتابعين، وثبت تصحيحه عن الإمام أحمد وعن الحافظ القسطلاني وعن محمد بن إبراهيم الوزير وعن جماعة من أهل العلم أن النبي صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم قال: يحمل هذا العلم من كل خلف عدوله، أي أهل العدل فيه. ينفون عنه، أي عن العلم، تحريف الغالين وانتحال المبطلين وتأويل الجاهلين. ففي هذا الحديث بيان لمهمة مستمرة وثابتة مستقرة يسير عليها أهل العلم ويأخذها الخالف منهم عن السالف ويتسلم رايتها التلاميذ من الشيوخ، ألا وهي الدفاع عن الدين والرد على المبطلين والغالين والضالين. أما الغالين أو أما الغالون، فالغالون هم أهل الغلو، والغلو هو مجاوزة الحد في الأمور، ولقد نهى عنه الشرع الحنيف، فقد ثبت عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم أنه قال: إياكم والغلو في الدين، فإنما أهلك من كان قبلكم غلوهم في أنبيائهم. وهناك فرق أيها الإخوة الأحبة بين التمسك بالدين والغلو فيه، فكل غال قد يكون متمسكا لكنه يزيد على التمسك أمورا من عنده يخترعها ويبتدعها ويبتكرها وهو يحسب أنه متمسك. نعم هو متمسك، لكنه يزيد على تمسكه مثل هذه الأمور الباطلة. وليس كل متمسك غاليا، فالمتمسك هو الذي يبقى على الهدي ثابتا وللسنة داعية من غير زيادة ومن غير إسراف، ثابت لا تزحزحه الأهواء ولا تغيره الآراء. وأهل الغلو لغلوهم يحرفون نصوص الشريعة، كاليهود والنصارى الذين حرفوا لغلوهم في أنبيائهم نصوص كتبهم، لأنهم توهموا أنهم إذا حرفوا كان ذلك نصرة لأنبيائهم، فلم يعلموا أن الحق في الثبات على المبدأ والتمسك به دون ذلك التحريف الذي يصرف الحق عن قاعدته ويبعد الصواب عن أساسه. وأما المبطلون فهم أولئك الذين يظهرون شيئا يكون ضده، فلذلك هم يدعون الحق وليسوا من أهله، يدعون الصواب وليسوا حملته وليسوا رجاله، لأنهم أصلا لا يؤمنون بالحق حقا. وأما الضالون فهم أهل البدع الذين حرفتهم بدعهم عن الحق المبين وعن سنة سيد المرسلين عليه الصلاة والسلام، فلكي يمشوا بدعهم على الناس نراهم يؤولون نصوص الشريعة، وتأويلهم لنصوص الشريعة هو صرفهم إياها عن ظاهرها وحملهم لها على غير ما تحتمل مما يغير صفحة هذا الدين النقي الطاهرة الصفية ويسود نقاءها وصفاءها. فمهمة أهل العلم الرد على الغالين والمبطلين والضالين دفاعا عن السنة ورفعا لراية الدين.
طيب شيخ أتقيم هذا الحمام نكتفي للسماء إن
شاء الله. أكيدنا
Shall I just translate this so that it is connected, and then inshallah we'll stop for prayer, Maghrib inshallah. And then he said, and then Ibn Ahmad says, clarifying the status of the scholars of Ahl Sunnah, the scholars of guidance. He says that, and the text is, they negate from, or they remove away from the Book of Allah, the Mighty and Sublime, the tahrif, the alterations of the ghalin. I will explain the word ghalin later. And the intihal, the false lies and attributes of the mubtileen. And all these terms will be explained in the English. And also the false interpretations of the misguided. And then the Shaykh wanted to say that this is pointing to a hadith of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, which has been authenticated and which is narrated from many of the scholars. But from those who made it authentic is Imam Ahmad himself, and Al-Qastalani, and Ibn Wazir, and other people of their level. This hadith says that indeed this ilm of ours, and ilm here means deen, indeed this deen of ours, or this ilm of ours, will be carried by the trustworthy successors, the trustworthy followers of every generation, negating from it the tahrif, the alterations of the one gone beyond bounds, and the false lies of the liars, and the false interpretations of the misguided. This hadith is well known and authentic. And then he says, this hadith also explains one significant or many significant matters of the of the scholars, their concern, and the thing that they traverse or they follow. And this hadith also shows that they are firm upon and always have been established upon several matters from them. And this feature has been inherited by the later generations from the early generations, and khalaf an salaf, and from the students taking it from their teachers. So this thing is persistently going on, that these scholars and their students do this thing, and that is they, and he explains the word ghalim. Tahrif we know means alter something from its correct meaning or from its context. And we can refer back to the books in English if we want to have a precise definition, but one suffice will be tahrif is to take something away from its correct meaning or from a meaning which is not authentic. So they do this, and they are the ghalin. And who are the ghalin? They are the ones who have ghulu, they are excessive. And ghulu is defined as going overboard in matters. And therefore, the shar has negated this point. Islam and its ruling has negated this point. Shaykh, ma al-ayah al-ladhi zakat wa iyyakum ghulu. Iyyakum ghulu. Sayyid, there's a hadith which says, wa iyyakum ghulu, and beware of ghulu. For indeed, this ghulu destroyed the people before you, because they became excessive in their prophets. And this is referring to the Jews and the Christians. So there is now, the Sheikh said, a difference between one who adheres to his deen and one who is excessive in his deen. Because one who is excessive can also be adherent to the deen, but what he has done, he has added things from his own self, has innovated and added things to the Sharia, therefore his adherence has gone to a high level called ghulu in the deen. And therefore he has gone beyond bounds in the Sharia. And this may mean adding an innovation and misguidance to the deen. But one who is adherent, one who is mutamassik with the deen is not a one who is excessive, because he has remained within the bounds of the sharia. He has remained firm with the sunnah and its guidance without adding or taking away, and without adding his own desires. And this is the main crux of what the Shaykh is saying, because we know this is a word for word translation, but a meaning of what he's saying. And the people of And then he went on to say, the people of Ghulu, they make tahrif, they alterate the text, such as the Jews and Christians did with regard to their book. And they did this thinking that by changing the text of their book, they would aid their deen. But rather they destroyed their deen and made it much weaker. So likewise, the one who is ghali, one who is gone beyond bounds, he adds to his deen thinking with his foolishness that by doing this he will support his deen and make it firmer by nusra. And this is not the case, rather he weakens it and he adds to it. As for the mubtileen, and they are the ones who claim something, who manifest something, display something, but they hide something which conflicts it or which opposes it in their own hearts or within themselves. And thus they claim to be people of the haqq, but they are not. They claim to have the truth with them, but they do not. They claim to be the people who carry the manhaj, but they are not. And thus they add lies by their false claims and attributes. Because from the onset, from the beginning, and from the asal, they are not from the people of the haqq. And then the dalun, the misguided, and this refers to the people of bid'ah, as the Shaykh said, because they are the ones who have gone away from the sunnah and added the bid'ah. And they do this, adding in innovation, and they want people to follow the innovation, and they persuade people by making tahrif, make alterations of the text. They bring you a text and alter it to what they think it means, but not what the real meaning is, not the fahm of the Salaf al-Salih. So these, and then they try to carry these people upon these things. But rather, the scholars, their concern is to negate all these things, to keep the deen pure and clean. And inshallah with this, نقتصي طيب الشيخ said he wants just to finish off the مقدمة, because everything so far has been on the مقدمة, the introduction by Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal رحمه الله.
ثم يقول رحمه الله منتقلا إلى وصف المبتدعة والمردود عليهم من الغالين والمبطلين والضالين, قال الذين عقدوا ألوية البدعة وأطلقوا عنان الفتنة يقولون على الله وفي الله وفي كتاب الله تعالى الله عما يقول الظالمون علوا كبيرا بغير علم, فنعوذ بالله من كل فتنة مضلة, وصلى الله على محمد. أما بعد, يشير إلى أن أهل البدع من سماتهم أنهم يرفعون راية البدعة لواء لهم, وبسبب ذلك يحدثون الفتن ويطلقونها بين الناس. ومن سماتهم وصفاتهم أيضا أنهم يقولون على الله, يفترون على الله الكذب, وفي الله, يصفون الله بما لم يصف به نفسه أو ما لم يصف به رسوله, وفي كتابه, وكذلك يتقولون على كتاب الله وكلامه بغير علم, تعالى الله عما يقول الظالمون علوا كبيرا. ثم تعالى الإمام أحمد رحمه الله من كل فتنة مضلة, ربطا للأمة لربها وتحقيقا للأمر بالدعاء لعل الله يستجيب, لأن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال الدعاء هو العبادة, فختم مقدمته رحمه الله بالدعاء الذي هو ربط للعبد وربه تبارك وتعالى.
And then Imam Ahmad says, and the text is, and in this statement Imam Ahmad explains some of the attributes of the people of innovation and misguidance, and therefore to keep us wary and to so that we know who they are, he says, those who raise high the flag of bid'ah and who open up the gates of fitna to them, they say about Allah and with regard to Allah, and how high above and great is Allah, and how innocent is Allah and free is Allah from what they say, what these misguided people say, and about his book, and these deviants they say about his book, without any knowledge. Then Imam Ahmad said, and I seek refuge in Allah from all fitna which deviates, from all trials which are misguide, and praise and all salah be upon our Muhammad. And that was the text. And then, as we know, this is an indication, a pointing by Imam Ahmad of some of the simat, attributes and characteristics of Ahlul Bid'ah. And it is from them is that they raise their flag of Bid'ah, trying to invite people to it. And this flag is opened up high such that they cause, and they are a way of inciting innovation and fitna. And the Shaykh here didn't go at length because of the time. He did a short explanation. And also from their attributes is that they say about Allah, i.e. and about Allah, and this thing has been thought carefully. And Allah means about Allah, and about His deen, His sharia. They attribute lies to Him, and to say something is halal and something is haram, and about Himself. And fillah, and about Himself again. They say about these things, the things of which Imam Ahmad sought refuge from, and said, how high and how free is Allah from these things that they say about Allah. And then he said, seeking refuge in Allah, and from the fitna that these people cause, and connecting the ummah and the people with their Lord, he ended in a dua. And he, and this dua, right. This dua was seeking to ask Allah for refuge from all these traits and these characteristics. And this is as if Imam Ahmad is teaching his people what the Prophet said. He said, "Ad-du'a huwa al-ibadah." The du'a is the crux and the matter of ibadah, and is the main crux and the lub, and is the main goal of worship. And by this thing, Imam Ahmad ends his risala. And by this we stop inshallah for Maghrib.
Hope that tawfiq. Barakallahu feekum, Shaykh. You had a ajamduhu, and had a qatima.
Where must it be?
In here, the durus min minhaj. Shaykh Hubil an zakarahu min kitabihi radha wa zakar.
إلى تلميذه مسدد لما أشكل عليه أمر الفتنة قال بعد المقدمة التي شرحناها أما بعد وفقنا الله وإياكم لما فيه طاعته وجنبنا وإياكم ما فيه سخطه واستعملنا وإياكم عمل العارفين به الخائفين منه إنه المسؤول ذلك. فهذا من الإمام أحمد أيضا دعاء له ولإخوانه. ولقد ذكر كثير من أهل العلم أن من آداب الدعاء أن يبدأ الداعي بنفسه ثم يثني بغيره ممن يريد الدعاء له، وهذا ما ذكره الله في كتابه: ربنا اغفر لنا ولإخواننا الذين سبقونا بالإيمان. فدعا الإمام أحمد ربه تبارك وتعالى أن يوفقهم للطاعة، وأن يجنبهم لما فيه غضب الرب جل في علاه، وأن يرزقهم الأعمال الصالحة التي تجعلهم من الملتزمين بأمره والخائفين منه جل في علاه. ثم بدأ وصيته لمسدد ومن معه ممن أشكل عليهم أمر السنة في الفتنة بتقوى الله تبارك وتعالى.
Assalamu alaikum. After reconvening and resuming for this session, and going over what Imam Ahmad wrote to Musaddad when the matter of the sunnah in the time of the fitna became confused and clouded for him, and after the muqaddimah, the introduction which we have, which we went over before Maghrib. The text is as the Shaykh says. May Allah give us tawfiq and give us guidance to His obedience and make us far away from His anger. And may He use us and you in the deeds of those who know, those who fear Him, for indeed He is responsible for this tawfiq. Tape, Sahi, because it's going to take too long. Tape. And therefore, after this, he says that, as again, this is a dua from Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, rahimahullah, a dua for himself and then for his brothers and his ikhwan, his brothers in Islam. And indeed, many of the people of knowledge have mentioned that from the adab, the etiquette of making dua is that you begin with yourself and then you follow it up with other than yourself, your brothers in Islam. And this is, and follow the saying of Allah when Allah says, and the English is, O my Lord, forgive us and for our brothers who preceded us. And thus he began with himself. He began making this dua, asking for righteous deeds, amal salih, and for those, and the kind of deeds that are done by the people who know Allah and who fear Him.
ثم قال وأوصيكم ونفسي بتقوى الله العظيم ولزوم السنة فقد علمتم بما حل بمن خالفها وما جاء في من اتبعها. ابتدأ وصيته بتقوى الله، والله عز وجل يقول يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته. فتقوى الله هي الأساس الذي تبنى عليه شخصية المسلم. وتقوى الله كما فسرها بعض التابعين واسمه طلق بن حبيب قال التقوى عمل بطاعة الله ابتغاء مرضات الله على نور من الله، واجتناب لمعصية الله على نور من الله ابتغاء مرضات الله. فالتقوى إذن ليست ادعاء أو أمنية أو حلما ليليا أو نهاريا، ولكنها فعل وترك، فعل للمأمور وترك للمحظور. ثم قال ولزوم السنة، وهذا ما ورد أو دليله ما ورد عن العرباض بن سارية رضي الله تعالى عنه قال وعظنا رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم موعظة وجلت منها القلوب وذرفت لها العيون، فقلنا يا رسول الله كأنها موعظة مودع فأوصنا. فماذا قال عليه الصلاة والسلام؟ أوصيكم بتقوى الله، أوصيكم بتقوى الله والسمع والطاعة. وإن تأمر عليكم عبد الحبشي وإياكم ومحدثات الأمور، إلى أن قال وعليكم بسنتي. فأوصاهم صلوات الله وسلامه عليه بلزوم السنة. ثم قال فقد علمتم بما حل بمن خالفها وما جاء في من اتبعها. أما من خالفها فيكفي فيه قول الله فليحذر الذين يخالفون عن أمره أن تصيبهم فتنة أو يصيبهم عذاب أليم. وأما من اتبعها فيكفي فيه أيضا قول الله تبارك وتعالى وإن تطيعوه تهتدوا. ففي طاعة النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم الهداية، ذلك الأمل الذي يتمناه كل مؤمن ويدعو به ربه كل مسلم في كل صلاة في اليوم على الأقل 10 مرة، يقول اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، ومفتاح هذه الهداية هو لزوم سنة رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم.
And then the text goes on to say, okay. And then I leave this wasiya, I give this bequest, and I make this wasiya to myself and to you, to have taqwa of Allah, to have fear of Allah the Great. And what taqwa will be explained in the text. To have taqwa of Allah the Great, and to adhere, to make luzum, adherence to the sunnah. For indeed you know that which occurred to those who opposed the sunnah. And you know that which happened to those who follow it, i.e. the sunnah. That was the text. The Sheikh then went on to say that this wasiya, this bequest, this legacy left by and begun by Imam Ahmad, began with taqwa, to have fear of Allah. And he began with taqwa, and we know that this taqwa is referred to in the verse, O you who believe, say, O you believe, fear Allah as you should be feared. And this fear is the basis upon which the Muslim builds his personality, his character. And then he went on to define taqwa. And this definition of taqwa is taken from a famous tabi'i who is known as Talq ibn Habib. And
taqwa amalun bi ta'ati Allah.
Taqwa is acting by obedience to Allah.
ابتغاء مرضات الله.
Seeking the pleasure of Allah.
على نور من الله.
From a light from Allah.
واجتناب لمعصية الله.
As well as staying away from disobeying Allah.
على نور من الله.
From a light from Allah.
ابتغاء مرضات الله.
Seeking the pleasure of Allah. This saying is available in English in the Book of Creed by Al-Barbahari. So if you want to refer back to it, you can. And therefore, in this saying and this definition of taqwa by Talq ibn Habib, we have and we are shown that taqwa is acting and leading. It is not just a hope and an aspiration. Neither is it a dream or a figurative thing. Rather, it is acting and a leading and abstaining and staying away from certain matters. And luzul, adherence to the sunnah. And we know that means to stay with it. And the Sheikh gave one proof, and the hadith is a long hadith. And I will not translate it, but I can refer you to 40 hadith. It is in there, and it is the hadith of Irbad ibn Sariyah. And it begins that the Prophet, may Allah have peace and blessings upon him, gave us a speech which made the eyes weep and the heart fear. And so we said, it is as if you have given a farewell speech, O Messenger of Allah. And this is the meaning of the hadith. So they say, give us a legacy or bequeath us, make us a wasiya. So in this wasiya, he said, I give you this, that you fear Allah. And that you obey your leader, even if he be a Abdun Habashiyan. And there are many different narrations. And then he went on to say, that those of you who live after me will see immense differences. Therefore adhere to my sunnah, and the sunnah of the Khulafa Rashideen. So in this hadith is sufficient proof. So if you want the full hadith, refer to Qudi hadith. It is either number 27 or number 28 in that set. So this was the hadith of Irbad ibn Sariyah, and it clearly shows the significance of adhering to the sunnah. And then as for those who oppose the sunnah, then he mentioned one verse, and the verse is, let those who oppose the sunnah be aware, let some fitna befall upon them, or great azab be inflicted upon them. This is in Surah Al-Nur, if I'm not mistaken. And then, as for those who follow the Sunnah, then indeed the verse which is sufficient. In those, verily those who follow you, they are guided. And guidance is from ittiba, from following the Messenger. And every Muslim seeks for guidance and asks for it. And every person does this many, many a time. And this guidance cannot be attained apart from by making ittiba, apart from by following. And this is done when we say in the Quran and in our Salah, when we say ihtina sirat al-mustaqim, guide us to the straight path.
ثم قال رحمه الله فآمركم أن لا تؤثروا أي تقدموا على القرآن شيئا فإنه كلام الله. لذلك كان من كلام النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم في خطبة الحاجة وخير الكلام كلام الله. فكل كلام كلام الله عز وجل خير منه. وهذه الخيرية ليست فقط خيرية كلام كون هذا الكلام من الخالق وذاك الكلام من المخلوق، بل إنها خيرية هدي وإصلاح وبما يصلح الله به عباده فيه. لذلك يقول الله عز وجل في كتابه عن نفسه أأنتم أعلم أم الله، ويقول تعالى ولا ينبئك مثل خبير، ويقول تعالى ألا يعلم من خلق وهو اللطيف الخبير. كل ذلك بيان فيه أن الله تبارك وتعالى يصلح عباده بما أنزله إلى نبيه من كلامه وبما أوحاه إليه من قرآنه. فخير الكلام كلام الله.
And then Imam Ahmad goes on to say, and I order you that you do not, and the meaning is that you do not put yourself forward to anything over the Quran, for indeed it is the kalam, the speech of Allah. And then he said that this is, and he said this day that we did not put ourselves forward before the words of Allah or the Quran because it is the word of Allah. He said this because, and but this status is only given to the words of Allah, and he referred to the Khutbatul Haja, the prayer or the sermon of need, to show his proof and how he is getting the evidence that in there it said khayru kalamu, the best of speech is the speech of Allah. So therefore, if the best of speech is the speech of Allah, no one has a right to go forward of it or have anything before it. And this bestness or this khayriya, this being better, this excellence, it's not only because it is the words of Allah, although that would be sufficient, but because it contains in it guidance and ways of reformation, reforming the ummah and the slaves. And then he says, these things give it this khayriya, these are aspects in which the khayriya is manifested. And then the Shaykh quoted some verses from them, is that, are you more knowledgeable than Allah? And then he went on to say that, does he who created you not know, and he is the Latiful Khabir? And he quoted another verse, it escaped me, but inshallah we can refer back to the tape and get it, inshallah. So therefore, in these is a clear clarification that the words of Allah are the cause for reformation of the slaves and the servants, man and humanity. They're the ones that lead them to the ultimate goal.
وأهل العلم من أئمة السنة يربطون كلامهم المنهجي بالكلام العقائدي ويجعلون ذلك كله وسيلة تربوية يتربى على أنوارها المتبعون لهم ويقتفي آثارها السالكون سبيلهم. فقول الإمام أحمد فآمركم ألا تؤثروا على القرآن شيئا فإنه كلام الله كلام منهجي وفيه جانب تربوي أخلاقي، وعقبه مباشرة ذكر الجانب العقائدي، لأن ذلك الزمن الذي أشكل على مسدد فيه أمر الفتنة كانت فيه فتنة خلق القرآن، تلكم الفتنة التي تأثر بها الكثيرون ولم ينجو منها إلا القليلون. وخلاصتها أن هؤلاء المنحرفين الضالين زعموا أن القرآن الذي هو كلام الله مخلوق من مخلوقات الله، وحاش لله أن يكون كلامه مخلوقا له، وإنما هو صفة من صفاته كما يليق بجلاله وعظمته. يكفي المسلم هذا العموم مع شيء مما سيرد من كلام الإمام أحمد حتى تكون المسألة عنده واضحة جلية بينة. يقول: وما تكلم الله به فليس بمخلوق، وما أخبركم به عن القرون الماضية فغير مخلوق. إذ القرآن فيه القصص وفيه الإخبار عن أهل القرون الماضية، فهذا القرآن الكريم الذي فيه هذه الأخبار وهذه القصص، القصص وتلكم الأحكام، هذا كله ليس بمخلوق، إنما هو كلام الله العلي الأعلى سبحانه وتعالى. قال: وما في اللوح المحفوظ وما في المصحف وتلاوة الناس وكيفما قرئ وكيفما وصف فهو كلام الله غير مخلوق. تأملوا أنه يركز على شيئين، أما الأول فهو وصفه بأنه كلام الله، وأما الثاني بأنه ليس مخلوقا، لأن بعض الناس قالوا نحن نقول كلام الله ونقف. فكان الإمام أحمد ينكر على هؤلاء كثيرا ويقول: لابد أن تصرح، ولا يجدي هذا التهاون أو هذا التساهل أو هذا التوقف أو هذه الأمور المبهمة غير الواضحة، لابد أن تكون واضحا صريحا بأن تقول كلام الله غير مخلوق. وهذا من صفة أهل السنة قديما وحديثا، أن يكونوا واضحين صريحين ظاهرين، لا لبس في كلامهم ولا غموض في مناهجهم.
And then the Sheikh went on to say, before quoting the actual text, that the people of ilm, the scholars, the people of Ahl Sunnah, they connect their speeches and their kalam, their speech and their converse with the points of manhaj. They connect it to points of aqidah. And this is seen in this text, inshallah. We'll see how it is done. And they make this connection because it has a effect on the individual. And thus when Ahmed says, and now going to the text, and whatever Allah spoke with, then it is not created, and whatever He informs us of about the past nations, then it is not created, and whatever is in the Lawh al-Mahfuz, the preserved tablet, and whatever is in the Mus'haf, and the recitation of the people, however they recite it,
And whenever they recite it, it is described as being the speech of Allah not being created. That's a full text. But then when we give the sharh, it'll be broken up. So therefore, it is as if when Ahmed said the first part, that the Ahl Sunnah, they do not go forward or step forward before the Quran. That is a point of manhaj, how they interact with the Quran. And then he followed that up with matters of aqidah. So in this is a cultivation, a tarbawi aspect implanted by Ahmad ibn Hanbal. And that's because Musaddad, the person who this treatise has been given to in the origin and to everyone after him, and in his time, he mentioned these points because in that time, the people, even many scholars, were affected by this fitna, this trial, this innovation invented by the Mu'tazila of Khalqul Qur'an, of saying that the Qur'an was created. And we know that the Qur'an is the speech of Allah, and the Shaykh will explain. And thus Ahmad ibn Hanbal says what he says. So therefore, and the brief summary, because this matter can be gone into much detail, is that these munharifun, these deviants, these misguided people, they claim that the Qur'an was created, and innocent, and how far above is Allah from these claims that they make. Because indeed the Qur'an and the Kalam is from the sifat, from the attributes of Allah. And we know that attributes of Allah are not created, but it is sufficient to know the generality of this ruling here and right now. And you can refer back to the books of Aqidah in English for this matter. But it is sufficient to know the generality. Which will clarify for us this point. And what Ahmad said, what Ahmad ibn Hanbal said, and then he went on to quote a part of this, that says that whatever Allah spoke with, then it is not created. Because, and added, so whatever Allah spoke with, it is not created. And whatever He informs us of, regarding the stories of the people of old, then it is not created. This is because the Quran contains within it stories, parables of the people and of the prophets past and before our prophet. It contains information regarding the Jews and the Christians and the stories of old, Akhbar al-Mahdi'in. Therefore, it is as if Ahmad is saying that these stories is bespoken by Allah, they're not created. And then went on, when Ahmad says, then go back to the shaykh again. Because we know from the usloob is that you read the text and you break it down point by point. So if it's hard, brothers, go back to the tape. He says that, and whatever is in the Lawhul Mahfuz, that which is in the tablet, preserved tablet, and in the suhuf, the mushaf, and etc. to the end of the saying, then it is also not created. I mean, the matter, inshallah, will stick here and will stick to generalities. So think and ponder and contemplate upon what Ahmad is trying to focus your mind upon. Upon what Imam Ahmad is trying to focus your mind upon. On two matters. First thing, that the Quran is the Kalam of Allah. Second matter, that it is not created. And listen why. Because he says, some of those deviated people, they say, or some people say, the Quran is the speech of Allah, and they stop there. And that is not sufficient, especially at that time, especially when this bidah was innovated. Rather, Ahmad is saying you have to add the second part to say, and it is not created. You have to say both parts. You have to say the Quran is the Kalam of Allah, and add the clarification, add the bayan that it is not created because of what these deviant people have added to the deen. So this is from the methodology of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, that they make their words clear, and especially with regard to the sifat. So this being clear, being very open and manifest, is from the attributes of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.
نريد أن نختصر حتى نقطع شيئا من هذه الوصية العظيمة، وإلا فقد ينقضي الوقت ولا نتم قراءتها فضلا عن شرحها. قال: وبعد كتاب الله وسنة النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، فالحديث عنه وعن المهديين أصحاب النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، والتصديق بما جاءت به الرسل، واتباع سنة النجاة وهي التي نقلها أهل العلم كابر عن كابر. في هذه الفقرة إشارة إلى ثلاثة أشياء. أما الشيء الأول، إشارة إلى المنهج المسلوك المتبع الذي سار عليه النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم في سيرته وفي حياته كلها. أما الشيء الثاني فالإشارة إلى الأحاديث المروية عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم، والتي رواها أئمة العلم في كتبهم ومصنفاتهم. والأمر الثالث اتباع الصحابة، لأن اتباعهم هو النجاة، إذ لما بين النبي عليه الصلاة والسلام افتراق الأمة أخبر أن الناجين من كانوا على مثل ما عليه الرسول صلى الله عليه وسلم وأصحابه.
And then the Sheikh says, we're going to make it even more concise such that we can benefit from this book, because otherwise, due to lack of time, we wouldn't be able to even read the book, let alone understand it and have some sharh. So therefore he says, going back and making a mukhtasir sharh and quoting the text. And after the book of Allah and the sunnah of our messenger and the hadith regarding him from the guided companions of our messenger, peace and blessings be upon him, and in having tasdeeq, having trust and belief in that which has come from the messenger, and following the sunnah, and in following the sunnah is najah, is success. And this is, and the hadith is that which has been transmitted by the people of knowledge, ilm, akabir and kabir and kabirani, from one after the other, from the elders to the elders. That was the text. And the Sheikh says, in brief, this sentence or this paragraph refers to three matters. The first matter, it refers or points to the manhaj which is traversed, the manhaj which is followed. This is which was followed. This manhaj is that which was followed by the messenger throughout his whole life. That's the first point. The second point, it indicates